Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Voice note your point of view on WhatsApp.
063-688-0959.
Kaya.
959. On the street.
On the air.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us, and we continue with your reactions. We continue with also a political reaction as well to what we saw at the Oval Office, as well as the budget that finally was presented to us. So on the line with us is IFP leader Vilinkosini Hlabisa. Bab Hlabisa, thank you so much for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, my sister, as well as the listeners of the radio station.
Minister Hlabisa, I know we asked you to respond to the budget and to give us reaction on the budget. Do you want to maybe add your views as to what we just saw at the White House?
Yes, at the end.
All right, not a problem at all. So your reaction to the budget?
I call the budget presented by the minister work with what you have.
Mm-hmm.
This budget is a combination of good aspects and difficult aspects.
Mm-hmm.
The good aspects, firstly, the education allocation, the employment of teachers, the attention to be given to ECD, is a very good exercise. Even during our campaign and in the budget tables in March, we were championing the allocation of more resources to education. That is a good aspect. Secondly, the allocation for the employment of more, about 800 medical officers and health professionals, and putting more money in the health clinic, hospital infrastructure, and the equipment is what we also championed, and it's catered very well in this budget. Thirdly, the over a 1 trillion rand injection of funds on infrastructure is going to create job opportunities and give an opportunity to our country to have the economy growing. As we know, over a period of 10 years, our economy is stagnant. Fourthly, more allocation to municipalities falls in line with the reviewed white paper on local government that we launched on Monday, because local government is where people live. And if you don't review the funding model, you will never see municipalities working. So now, the more allocation created in this budget is a good thing. What therefore remains now? We need to follow the money going to municipalities, going to the infrastructure projects, so that it does not disappear into wrong hands.
Mm-hmm.
Over a trillion rand can bring a big change in our country. The difficult areas in the budget, the introduction of fuel and levy, is going to trigger the increase of food prices, as well as the increase in the transport, either taxis, buses, whatever mode people are going to use. The motorist will have hard time. That is a difficult area in the budget. And the second difficult area is zero-rated food items, which were free of VAT, which has been a great relief to the ordinary and poorest of the poor if it was maintained even in this budget. But unfortunately, as I said, this budget, I can classify it as work with what you have. Whatever you might have wanted to have, if it is beyond what you have, you can't have it. What we need to focus more as a government now is efficiency in terms of the available money, so that we can save where we can, so that more allocation can be directed to infrastructure. Because if you make South Africa a construction site, you are creating opportunities for economic growth and job opportunities which can cushion the challenge that is going to be created by the fuel levy, as it is going to trigger many increase in terms of, as I've indicated, food items, the prices will go up, as well as the transport industry will increase its tariff, and it's going to come hard on our people. But overall, we welcome the budget. It's a progressive budget because it managed to protect the social services and activities which are of great relief to our people.
Minister Tlhabiso, one of the things that came up is the ease, making the private-public partnerships sort of run smoother, to have that ease of doing business, particularly when it comes to unsolicited tenders and proposals. There was also a group outside, though, at the same time, which cautioned government about this move, saying, you know, we must be careful as we are trying to make sure that things are governance takes place and there is ease of doing business, that we don't lose sight of the fact that we may be losing government assets to the private sector and not balancing, you know, what we need to do as government, as a state, with the interests of the private sector. Your take on that?
The truth of the matter, the government does not have sufficient money to do everything. So working with business sector is an option which is better than going and do loans which will be heavy on the country. And the exercise of working with business people is what the IFP supports, because and when you have limited financial resources, it doesn't help to lock yourself and not explore and think outside the box how you can ensure that you generate more financial resources in order to carry out the projects that will benefit people at the end. I can make an example. If you enter into a partnership with the private sector, and they do a road, they tar the road, they put in a good condition, and they manage it over a period of time under their control, and over a time, then they hand over back to government, having generated the income which they might have generated over a period, is a good thing to go as a long-term investment, as the government cannot have every money now.
Minister Tlhabiso, we'll have to have more time to discuss some of the other issues as well. Let me give
in
you...
In relation to...
Yes.
The
Oval Office conversation. Yes, that meeting.
Yeah. Well, firstly, let me commend the president of our country, the way how he behaved. Really, I was very upset how the President of the United States wants to treat South Africa. We are a country. And you can't deliberately share a wrong information at our expense. And the videos he showed there, really, those people, when he says it's hundreds of people, it cannot be hundreds of people in that stadium. The pictures he showed as sign of genocide, the people who are in the delegation who happen to be white in color, and are telling him there is no such in South Africa. You see, really, I was very upset. The president of America should respect South Africa, and he must not carry on perpetuating lies about genocide. And I was looking at what he was showing in those paper cuttings. Really, it doesn't make sense to me, because it's not what I see is happening in our country. Really, he went below what I thought he should rise as a leader of a powerful country in dealing with matters.
Did we respond to him adequately enough?
Come again?
Did we respond to that adequately enough?
I think the setting was not conducive for a convincing argument, but the team, the president, Minister Steenhuisen, the president of COSATU, Mr. Rupert, and they became very clear that what you are believing in is not there in South Africa. Some, it's just a common problem across the board, not confined in South Africa. I hope in a private meeting, it will be a conducive environment to make everybody apply his or her mind on the information that the team is going to share. I just hope he will appear out of the private meeting with a complete change view of what is happening in South Africa.
Appreciate your time, Minister. That's the Minister of COCTA there, but speaking to us as the IFP leader, Velinkosini Hlabisa, also just commenting on what we saw earlier on in the White House, that meeting between President Trump as well as President Ramaphosa. We'll continue to take your reaction as well, 086-00-00959.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Your reaction from different political parties as well as for both the budget as well as the meeting at the US that took place between President Trump and President Ramaphosa. On the line with us is DA spokesperson Karabo Kakao. Just for your reaction, Karabo, good evening and welcome.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me, and good evening to the people of South Africa.
Let's start with the Oval Office. We've all been watching. What's your take as the DA?
Look, John Steenhuisen was very clear there that it's important that we speak about the state of South Africa, that we are honest. South Africa, yes, has a criminal crime problem, but it's not a specifically white farmers problem. It is a crime across the board altogether. So when we look at interventions on dealing with crime, either it be the beefing up of our boots on the ground, the transport or the ICT in the form of technology that helps us to track crime, then we must be honest about the root of the problem so that we can address it. So the Democratic Alliance is very proud about the submissions that were made by our leader, who is honest and without fear was able to paint the clear picture of what it is that is true about South Africa. It's also true that majority of the people of this country love South Africa. They want to fight for South Africa and they want to see South Africa win. And even in the agricultural sector, people want to make sure that not only are they able to produce more food for the people of South Africa, but that they're able to contribute towards a greater goal of ensuring that more people are able to get jobs to put food on the table for themselves and their families. Mm-hmm. And that's what we are happy to have seen there. And we're very glad that more and more South Africans are coming out to be honest about the truth of South Africa. And ultimately, then, the decisions that are supposed to be taken in the White House within Pennsylvania Avenue are ones that are able to see the relationship between South Africa and the United States more strengthened, making sure that our trade partnership is important, making sure that we are able to invest in this economy. Because if people of South Africa are supposed to be hopeful about having job opportunities where they can live dignified lives, where they can take their kids to the school of their choosing, where they can clothe their children and feed them consistently without fear, then we need investment that is consistent, either it be domestic or international.
John Steenhuisen did not put forward the facts that black people, even those who live in farms, In terms of numbers, those facts, he didn't present those numbers. He didn't call out the language of genocide and say there is no white genocide. Why do you think that is? And wasn't that the strategy?
I think he said it just in different terms.
Why do you choose a different terminology when the language is very clear and specific that there is white genocide and that's the narrative?
Look, Ostamelo, even though I'm a traditional healer, I don't have my bones out. I don't have me sniffy out for me to have a sangomization. Let me finish my sentence and then you can rephrase.
No, what I'm saying is that you can maybe respond to the whole thing. I'm not asking you to be a sangoma. I'm just asking whether it was not the strategy and whether this is not the plan when he went in.
No, that's why. That's what I'm responding to, Melon. If you hear me, you'll hear what I'm saying here. That I'm not there with John. I'm not. I am in Cape Town. John is in Pennsylvania Avenue. So I can't tell you why John decided to use the words that he used the way that he did. But myself receiving them, I had the message. Perhaps when John comes back from Washington, you can ask John why he chose to use the words that he used. All I can do right now, in all fairness, is tell you what I heard John say in that bit. So it wouldn't be fair of you to expect me to tell you why John used the words that he used, because one, I didn't write the script for him. Two, John didn't tell us what he's going to go say. Three, none of us imagined the questions or the conversation to flow the way that it did. But at the heart of the conversation that was maintained at the Democratic Alliance, in line with today's budget, is to make sure that this economy grows at a fast enough rate to meet the demands of jobs in this country, so that the jobs that are currently here can be safeguarded, but to create more jobs, so that more and more people are able to be taken out of the clutches of poverty and that they are able to live dignified lives. This speaks then to private-public partnerships. This speaks to infrastructure investment, which we've heard Minister Kodongwana speak about today.
Karawa, I'll get to the budget. Let's take it one chunk at a time, because people are going to lose all the things that you've just said, and then it will be as if I'm interrupting you. Let's maybe continue and finish the issue at the Oval Office, and then we'll come back to the budget, which you'll have enough time to respond to. How does the DA feel about what Rupert said in terms of the capital of crime being the Cape Flats, and that as a DA, you guys are in charge of it and, you know, obviously must take accountability for that?
Yeah, you are not right. That Rupert is correct. And that's why the Democratic Alliance has asked for the devolution of powers as far as policing is concerned. Because if we are 100% in control of the policing, then we will have a direct response to crime in a province of our government. The issue here is gangsterism has been a problem for centuries, for decades actually, in the city of Cape Town and in the Western Cape. And in order for us to deal with it properly, then we must be able to be given the power and the resources to do so. Spreading thin the boots of police across the country on a national level without the authority to deal directly with the problem is not helping our cause. Even though the Democratic Alliance has then developed a LEAP system where we are able to employ more officers on the ground, those officers obviously have limited power in comparison to staff to deal with it. And even though we've been able to see the shifting of capitals outside of the Western Cape, outside of your Nyanga, outside of your Kwaifontein, outside of your Kaili, the country, if then the Desperate of Ramaphosa and the Nkunu would be able to devolve the powers and give the DA a shot to try to deal with crime heads on. Because unfortunately, even though the truth is that gangsterism is a problem in your Cape Flats and the Western Cape, you can't judge the DA against the success of combating crime there. If the DA is not control of the police, if that we're on a national level outside of the province is responsible for that. So it's only fair that the devolution call is heard, so that if we do fail to deal with crime, then after the devolution, then we can say the DA has failed to deal with crime. But until the DA is not in control of the police of this country in their own province, then it is not fair to judge the DA against an inability to seize crime.
Let's talk about the budget. You've obviously been posting about the fact that you feel victorious about that, the fact that we are here now with a different budget without a VAT increase. Tell me about the things that you're not happy about with regards to this new budget.
Well, look, we issued a statement to say, Ostamela, that we welcome the budget cautiously. Cautiously means that even though we celebrate we're celebrating the one trillion rand investment in infrastructure. We're also aware that we don't govern alone. One, two. We're also aware of the fact that there is a systematic problem of corruption within the state. And that's why we also celebrate that there's an identification of the wasteful expenditure of salaries on ghost employees. So we're pretty much are cautious in that regard. The tabulation has had a whole lot of what the Democratic Alliance has asked for in infrastructure development, in the form of water infrastructure, in the form of road infrastructure, in the form of building infrastructure itself. But what's also important for us to be able to focus on is making sure that we are able to maintain the current scoring on no more bailouts for SOEs, the current scoring on measuring government efficiency and effectiveness on meeting the real needs of South Africans as far as everyday face-to-face service delivery is concerned. So these are the things that we're going to be paying, to be placing a close watch on and paying the ear on the ground on. These are very, very important. And as far as now is concerned, we are happy that we are on the right direction. But obviously words mean nothing when I was Pamela. It is the actions that will tell the people of South Africa whether we are heading in the right direction or not. And as far as the DA and the GNU is concerned, our commitment is to making sure that these words that were delivered by Dr. Kodongwana are concerned, are delivered as a reality so that we are able to rescue South Africa ultimately.
Does that then mean you're opposed to the allocated money for Transnet as well as Eskom?
Look, the bailouts are another thing that we do not want, but our rail network needs investment. So infrastructure development speaks also to rail networks, and this is very important. That's what we want. But also as far as the energy generation of this country is concerned, we've also called, as we do in the Western Cape, for private generation of power so that we decentralize the energy generation and distribution authority outside of Eskom majority in a majority form, even though in other provinces like my home province, be able to see Centlake and all of those things. But we need to be able to see efficiencies there. So obviously, Eskom needs money, Eskom must work, but Eskom alone can't be the sole provider of electricity because it hasn't been reliable. We have other independent power producers that must be able to bid their share and be able to provide reliable electricity to South Africa.
So then where do you draw the line? Which state-owned entity does not deserve to be bailed out?
So the bailouts are not a thing when I was Pamela. They're not a thing that we want altogether. And if you would have read the statement and heard closely, there are no bailouts per se.
No, but they are. That's why I asked you. There's money that's going to be allocated to Transnet. There's money that's going to be allocated to Eskom. From what I understand, Postnet as well. So that's why I ask. Why are you selective in what then deserves the money? Everybody could give you a justification. The SABC can say, well, we need money. What we do is important for democracy and so on. So I ask, where do you draw the line?
So perhaps there's a language comprehension of the setup of the budget. From where I'm standing, an allocation of funds to Transnet and an allocation of funds to Eskom isn't a bailout. If it were a bailout, it would have been communicated as such. So it is a direction of money to run the ordinary operations thereof and an increase in investment to ensure that as far as the 1 trillion rand budget of infrastructure development is concerned, that we're able to maximize on the development thereof. That is different completely, Pamela, from a bailout.
I absolutely disagree with you, Karabo, because the Eskom bailout was articulated as such. This is basically the money that was committed when the Minister of Transport came in and was allocated that money. This is just merely the money going out in this fiscus, but that money was precisely allocated as a bailout. How can it no longer be a bailout all of a sudden? All that we're doing now is saying this is on this fiscus, this is how much we're taking it from the overall money that was allocated as a bailout. It was always there as a bailout.
Equally, equally, I disagree with you, and that's why I'm saying perhaps there's a language.
How is it not a bailout?
Problem here. Allow me to finish my sentence. So the reason why I say perhaps there is a difference in how we organize our language is because, particularly to say one, if we are a bailout, would mean that of the debt that Eskom has, as far as municipalities and departments pay in their debt to Eskom is concerned, that there would be aid there. That hasn't been communicated.
Say that again. A bailout would mean what?
A bailout, Osimelo, which means that as far as municipal debt, Eskom one, and provincial departments or government entities, as far, for example, Public Works is concerned, and their ability to pay their debt, that there would be assistance. But the communication currently, Osimelo, clearly stipulates that the order of the business is to make sure that we invest in the ultimate rollout of maximizing the infrastructure, one, who would roll out. But that doesn't go naked outside of the supplementary role that private power producers play in making sure that we're able to roll out electricity.
Ms. Kakao.
But the point I'm trying to raise here and drive home here is that as far as the Democratic Alliance is concerned, as far as infrastructure development in this country is concerned, we are still maintaining the position that without infrastructure development, we will not be able to see an economic growth that we want that will then address the demand of jobs that South Africans need, that will then be able to see us realize the ultimate goal of poverty alleviation and making sure that majority of the people of this country are able to put food on the table for themselves and their families. And that's why in the statement that we released, we made it very clear that this is a cautious acceptance, because we are aware that in the past 31 years, there has been a problem as far as spending efficiency is concerned, and ours is to be a watchdog to ensure that the commitments that were made by the president follow the letter of efficient service delivery to meet the needs.
Karabo, all I'm asking is really a simple question. I'm saying to you, for instance, if you speak to the SABC or any other entity for that matter, who will articulate why their own injection of capital is vital for different reasons. When you speak to the SABC, they'll tell you it's for democracy. When you speak to another entity, they'll tell you it's for different things. All I'm asking is, as a Democratic Alliance, where do you draw the line? Specifically with Eskom, it is a bailout. It was framed as such. With Transnet, it is, to what you're saying, the rollout of infrastructure, which is important. There is no argument there, and we're not arguing about that. I'm just asking, where do you draw the line in assisting which state-owned entity and allowing for that to happen? Because all of them will tell you, actually, all our needs, like the Postnet, all our needs are imperative for the well-being of South Africans.
I hear your question. I hear it. Perhaps the organization of my sentences are not meeting the satisfaction. The point I'm making here, Osimelo, is this. Government entities cannot exist willy-nilly without being able to meet the needs of South Africans. And if government entities do not perform optimally, then obviously, or are unable to manage their finances correctly, then there should be an end to the cap, because the state can't continue to bail out state entities that do not work. And that is something that was communicated across years of the Democratic Alliance. And the reason why I'm saying there's a difference between a bailout and sending out of money that has always been there as part of a budget line item to these entities is because they haven't been shut down altogether. Perhaps what makes it weird in this time around is that the minister mentioned them in comparison to other people that, or other entities that were not mentioned altogether, that they will be receiving funding, which is different from a bailout per se, which I read the budget statement document, and I was there sitting in Parliament when Minister Kotongwana received it, right? And I've received an additional briefing document on why I'm saying there's a difference between a bailout and appropriating the money for infrastructure development. Or if that were the case in the form of a bailout, then certainly the Democratic Alliance would have made a noise about it. It's not a case of us then playing dumb to the case or playing it down because of the GNU composition. That is not the case at all. The point I'm making here is when you speak of infrastructure investment, you can't speak of infrastructure development without speaking about energy, without speaking of water infrastructure, without speaking of a road network, a rail network, our ports and harbors. And perhaps that's where the confusion then comes in, as far as the minister's articulation of priority as far as infrastructure development is concerned.
DA spokesperson Karabo Kakao, thank you so much for making time for us this evening. She was giving us their reaction as the DA to the budget. As she said, you know, it was they're cautiously optimistic as the DA, as well as their reaction to what happened in the White House. I'm going to take more of your reaction. I've got your voice notes coming through. I'll do that in a short while. But I also want to get some reaction from the civil society. A senior researcher at Equal Education, Sam Bennan, is on the line with us. A very good evening to you, Sam. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Siswam. We appreciate the opportunity.
What was your take from the minister's pronouncement on the budget, his allocation to education, especially the new incoming you know, crashes into the system coming out of social development? Your sense of the allocation?
Yeah, I mean, on that specifically, it's important for us at least at EE to note that the March budget tabled a provisional allocation of an additional $29 billion to expand ECD services and protect teacher wages. However, in May, today, this May budget reduced that allocation to $19.5 billion. The reduction is entirely borne by the wage bill. And so naturally, we are concerned about this, what this actually means for schools. And I think also just to emphasize and highlight that, you know, grade R, which was not fully funded in the previous budget, despite it now being compulsory under the Bella Act, still today remains an unfunded mandate. And so our call as EE, as the movement, of course, is just to urge Parliament to amend the budget so that, you know, shortfalls that schools face to absorb all these learners into grade R can be accommodated. And we also want to highlight that, you know, that responsibility lies on government, and it actually has a legal and moral obligation to meet. It's not a nicety, you know.
One of the things that you've been adamantly, you know, calling for is obviously the speeding up of infrastructure in schools. And there's always been this contention between the department itself not having enough money and the department also in some instances relying on the Department of Infrastructure as well to support this this rolling out on infrastructure, particularly toilets. Your sense of where exactly this money will now finally come from, because when it comes to the crux of the matter, there's no, it's not for me, it's for the other department and so on.
Yeah, so in our analysis, you know, around the speech today, I think we, as EE, we are relieved that planned spending on conditional grants, like the education infrastructure and National School Nutrition Program, hasn't decreased. But where we are concerned is that the levels allocated wouldn't necessarily be sufficient for infrastructure backlogs to be eradicated and for, you know, our feeding schemes to function more optimally, particularly at schools located in rural provinces. And, you know, it's important to also highlight that we come off the background, you know, of a decade of budget cuts, you know, of austerity that has been essentially self-defeating. And our schools just seem to still remain under immense pressure. And quite frankly, you know, need every cent that they can get.
Is there then a great concern with regards to what's going to happen to these ECD centres and the allocation now being less than what we would hope for?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. We are extremely concerned about what this means in reality for, our grade R learners in particular. Because the reality is that schools have reported shortfalls, and that's across the board, across different provinces. And we emphasize that, government has a legal and moral obligation to meet this responsibility. I mean, you can't legislate a reform and then not fund it adequately. And so, that's something that we continuously, together with, other stakeholders in the sector, call on government to address when amending budget allocations to address those shortfalls.
Sam Bain is a senior researcher at Equal Education. Thank you so much for your time. Champion strategist at Grow Great, Dr. Tato Musidi, is also on the line with us just to give us their take on what did they make of the budget. A very good evening to you, Dr. Musidi. Good evening, and thank you so much for your time.
Good evening, Pamela. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, we've seen that the zero-rated fruits have now gone back to originally what we had before March. We no longer are going to get the extra foods. Your take on that?
Yes, I think it's a bit of a mixed emotions when we heard the results of the budget speech. But I think the first initial response was just the relief that the VAT will remain at 50%. And I think that's the general feeling that most of the regular South African would have. But it's definitely a missed opportunity to support low-income households by not looking at expanding that basic food zero-rated basket. I think one of our other concerns is just looking at the fuel levy and the increase that were communicated by the minister, because it also has additional impact on food security, which ideally we're trying to protect the most impoverished, the most vulnerable of the community. So there will definitely be an impact with food security when looking at the fuel levies being increased.
And in real terms, and this is one of the reasons we wanted to speak to you, you are the cold face of what poverty looks like. You see stunted children. You see what it's like on the ground. What does this kind of thing translate to? The fuel levy going up. And again, we're back to, and I know for many years you've been asking for that basket to be bigger. And we thought it was going to be, and then we're now back to it just remaining with the items that we started with in the first place.
Yeah, it's actually quite tragic in some circumstances. So at Grow Great, we work with communities which are really struggling in terms of just livelihoods and being able to put on the food on the table. So not only in, when we look at the urban areas, we're working in informal in settlements. In other provinces, we're working in more rural settings. For example, Limpopo or in rural Cape Winelands, for example. And what this translates to is that the average caregiver, a mother, a father, a grandmother, or whoever it is that's taking care of the children, will not have adequate food supply because they may not have the physical or the financial means to actually obtain the food, which is quite critical because we talk a lot about food security at Grow Great, which is our primary approach in trying to address stunting or malnutrition generally amongst children. So the real impact is that if a person is not financially able to afford the food, then it won't be accessible for the majority of the country.
I really appreciate your time there. We will one day make more time to just discuss a bit more what the impact this will be on the ground, particularly with the work that you do at Grow Great. Grow Great is an organization that really tries to help with food security really, really on the ground, and particularly with babies and mothers who are pregnant, just so that they can make sure that they get the kind of nutrition that they need, particularly when they are at the very onset of their pregnancy leading up to, I think, at about 6 months of the baby's life, and looking after those women really well in terms of getting them nutrition that they need, and just trying to track the children that they're not going to be stunted going into their formative years of school. I am going to take more of your calls, and I'm going to take also your reaction on 086-000-0959, 063-688-0959.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.